accession number 27081, Real One.
Could you tell me your full name and date of birth, please?
It's Craig George James Comber. My date of birth is 16th of May, 71.
And what is your current rank?
I'm a sergeant.
And when did you join the army?
1988, 2nd of May, I believe it was.
And so, what was your kind of background before you joined up? What made you want to join the army?
I wasn't really going anywhere with being in Civvy Street. I just got myself stuck in the YTS. I wasn't going to get anything out of that at the end, so I looked at the army. Originally it turned out to be a laugh, me and my mates going down the careers office, and out of all the like five or six of us that went down, I was the only one who joined up.
So what did they think of you joining up?
They were just, well, they thought it was a bit mad to start off with after it was only a joke to at the beginning, but yeah, happy.
What did your family think?
They were wanting me to do something. They realised that I was unhappy with what I was doing, so they backed me in what I was doing, joined as a junior soldier.
So what was your reception at REMI like, and why did you join REMI?
I'd had people within my family join the services. The majority of the people around me, as in people of my own age group, either joined the infantry. Well, basically that was all they joined was the infantry, the Royal Scots, that'd been the local regiment. But I was always trade orientated by my family. They'd always been skilled apprentices, stuff like that. And my dad said, well, if you're going to join, you may as well join and get a trade instead of just being an infantryman. I didn't have a clue what a recce-mate was to start off with. I went to the careers office, that was my first choice, and I followed it through, and that's how I ended up.
So you're a recovery mechanic?
Yeah, I'm a recovery mechanic, yeah.
What other trades were open to you?
Originally, they said I could have done anything, but with being colourblind, then I was restricted from that. But basically anything within the REMI was open to me to go into. And I think at that time they were doing a massive push towards recce-mix.
So what was your reception into the army like? What was the accommodation? How were you given your uniform? That sort of thing.
I remember arriving at Aberfield. We got the old duty, met off the train. I think it was a Hook station or whatever. And then we were just shipped down here in buses straight into the gym. And went through the paperwork chase that you normally do. And then it was straight down to the clothing store and issued straight from the shelves, all that stuff. There was no sizing of it. And he goes, here you go, that'll fit you. Didn't even know what it was to start off with.
And what were your barracks like?
Well, the barracks were all right, yeah. They look a bit aged now, like, but they were all right at the time, yeah.
Because I didn't know. You were at Princess Marina, weren't
yeah,
you?
I was at Prince Marina College, yeah. Yeah. But apart from that, yeah, accommodation was fine.
And what about your basic training? What was your basic training and what did you think of it?
Well, I joined as a junior soldier, obviously, at Prince Marina. Going for junior company. I think it was 14 weeks, I think it was, we'd done. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought, yeah, I knew once I got into the training side of life and got through the initial first few weeks, I knew that I'd decided that the decision I made to join the army was right. I could see that I was going to like it. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Was it hard?
Initially it was, yeah, but I sort of seemed to just fold into it. I seemed to just take to it quite easy, you know. It just seemed to be my kettle of fish, if you want to call it that.
And what was the attitude of your officers and NCOs?
It was initially very different. I think they were there to be hated to start off with, but as you progress through, you build up a relationship with the people you're working with, don't you? And by the end of it, I would say I got on quite well with, well, I'd say the whole section and platoon got on with the instruction staff quite well, you know.
And what about guard duties? Did you have to go on the main gate?
Yeah, we used to do that. We didn't actually do any of that till we actually finished basic training. Once we'd done that, we were then open to all the normal stag routines and started getting our fair share of them in, yeah.
So after the basic training, you obviously did your technical training. Was that here at Arborfield?
No, I with being here, Recumex didn't do any, because I obviously went to the senior companies because I was joined as a junior soldier. There was 12 of us, and we were the last recovery mechanics to go through CME Arborfield. Prince of Mary College. So I got to the stage, we were halfway through second div, and we weren't actually doing anything in the trade. So we asked if we could have a CEO's interview as a course, and we asked if we could be sent on to CME to carry on with our trade training, because we weren't doing anything apart from military skills and first aid. That's all we were doing. So we asked with the CEO here, and he says, yeah, you can go, as we were the last Recumex to ever come through as junior entrants.
So when you went to Borden, how were you trained there?
Well, initially we got there, we went straight in the driver training package. We're being recovery mechanics, we have to drive first. As soon as we'd done that, as soon as we finished all the driver training, as in the old HGV, now C plus E, truck driving, we went straight on to track driving, Cat H, and then as soon as we finished that and farmed on all the vehicles we needed to be familiarised with, we then went on to do our basic course.
So
yeah.
What vehicles did you learn to drive on then?
Obviously Bedfords, Foden 16 ton cargoes, Foden recovery, Centurion Arve, Chieftain Arve, Samson, Bedford Light, all the smaller B vehicles like Land Rover, the 3/4 ton, the 1 ton, all the Land Rover series, Scamaleca recovery. I think that was about it, just off the top of my head.
So, which out of those was your favourite vehicle to work with?
Track vehicles. I knew straight away that I wanted to be with track vehicles. It just clicked to me. I liked being on tracks, and that's where I considered the job to be, the prestige of it all.
So, after your training, where were you posted to then?
My first unit I went to was 2A Amphibious in Hamel. Absolutely brilliant place. I got there and I was quite lucky with the side of life. I was thrown right in at the deep end. With that, there was a shortage of Recumex when it came to the exercise. So instead of being under instruction from a class 2 or class 1 above me, I got basically handed my wagon and said, right, you're going on exercise. So I learned quite quickly my trade without the supervision of someone above me, you know.
So what rank were you at this stage?
I was a craftsman at that stage, but I think I was there 11 months and I got made up to Lance Corporal. But with that, I got posted on, so my posting in Hamel was quite short-lived, which was, obviously, with the promotion, it was good, but I enjoyed being in Hamel and wish I'd stayed there longer.
So which vehicles did you actually work with?
I was on there, initially, the Foden, that was all. There was no other recovery assets there at the time. We always had dummy axles and trailers and stuff like that, and Scammel commanders and stuff like that. But my main vehicle that I used was the Foden recovery vehicle.
What was the lifestyle there like in the barracks?
Brilliant, yeah. Probably the best posting I've ever had. Very short-lived, but because there was only the two units in Hamel, 2-8 and 3-5 and a small detachment of RMPs. It was a very peaceful sort of, there was none of the typical army slagging off match between units and that and fighting downtown, because it was all engineers. They just all seemed to get on, and it was an excellent place. Massive tourist attraction this summer and everything else like that, so it was really, really good, you know. Couldn't have asked for a better post than the first posting, really.
So where were you posted to after that?
I got posted to 1st Battalion Scots Guards in Hona. That was a massive culture shock compared to where I'd just come from. That was in Hona. That can be quite a dull and dreary place if you don't find something to do quite quickly, you know. But yeah.
Whereabouts in Scotland is that?
That was in Hona. Right. Hona in Germany. So I was just basically moved up the road, which was about 2 hours up the road from there. It was all right.
So what did you do there? Which vehicles?
Well, there again, it's recovery all the way through that I've always done with all my postings. The vehicles I used there was Warrior 513 recovery, supported obviously the 512 with an inferior section. I was actually in a rifle company myself, the Recce Mech, doing the recovery for the company. But I also had the access to the Foden recovery, which was held back in the LED, but mainly for an LED asset, not for the first sections.
So, what did your parent unit think of you as a Remy chap working with them?
It was quite strange being posted as Scots Guards and the Guards mentality. I think initially when you go to a posting like that, you've got to quickly adjust to their way of doing things, because there's no grey areas with the Guards regiments or a household division. It's either black or it's white. I quickly got into that mould, and I got on really well there. Couldn't have been in a better rifle company, I don't think. I was in right flank company, and that was absolutely brilliant.
Did it help that you're Scottish? Did you feel that?
Believe it or not, there wasn't a lot of Scottish people in the Scots Guards. There's a lot of Northerners that are in the Scots Guards, but you do get quite a few Scotsmen in it, like.
And so, where were you posted to after that?
Well, that was quite short-lived at the time, that post, and that was because the first Gulf kicked off. All other units were, like, scrambling for people. Because Scots Guards weren't actually deploying as a regiment, I got sent to 16th 5th Lancers in Hereford to deploy with them to the Gulf. I was sent there in the November. I got posted in the beginning of November, and I went down to Hereford by the end of November to start training for going to the Gulf. That was then. I was with a squadron of 16th 5th Lancers as the Recce Mech there.
So, what were they like as a parent unit?
Brilliant, yeah, very, very good. Cavalry, excellent, you know. Thoroughly enjoyed my time there. Hereford, another nice place as well. It was good to get out of Hona. You know, I'd only been there a short period of time and I'd seen enough of it there and then. It was good to go for the break, and it was a chance to actually get to do my job.
What did you think when you were told that you were going to be deployed to the first Gulf War?
I think initially it's just a total shock. I think when the news comes out, well, as it all comes out in the news, you sort of get washed along with the build-up of it all and stuff like that, and it becomes inevitable that you're going to go. I don't think you actually resign yourself to the fact. I think you just concentrate yourself to the fact that you are going, and you crack on what you have to do, you know. I mean, there's some people that totally didn't want to go, war. I wouldn't say that I did want to go to war, but it was a job that I was tasked to do, and I was going to make sure I was going to do it right.
You know? What were the preparations like?
Quite frantic, really. I remember we got a briefing off the commanding officer. He got the whole regiment in the hall. With the amount of forces that we were actually looking at taking on, he turned round and he basically said to us all to expect 80% casualties. So we're all looking around the regiment, sat in this hall, and thinking, right, I don't care about yous, but I'm one of those lucky 20% that are coming back. You know, that was on initial deployment. But the training was, very fast paced. Very, very fast paced. The regiment was very professional in what they'd done anyway. But obviously, everybody's personal skills had to come up to a very high standard at a very short period of time, and we got that done quite quickly. Everybody just switched on to it and just dealt with what they had to deal with and done what they had to do, you know.
Did you have anti-gas training for the first go?
NBC. We had loads of that. I could guarantee that every day we were doing NBC training of some sort, whether we were doing chemical handling, casualty handling, or we were doing just basic survive drills, everything else like that, you know. We had masses of that.
So how did you travel out there? Was it from Bryce Norton or...?
No, we flew from Hanover. We flew from Hanover Airport, and I can't remember where we landed. I think it was Al Jubail, I think it is. I can't remember where we actually flew into.
Do you know the type of aircraft you flew on?
Yeah, I think it was a VC-10 or something like that. Yeah, it was an interesting trip. Especially when they switched lights off coming to land, you know.
What was morale like on the flight?
I don't think anybody on the plane knew what they were actually getting themselves into at the time. I wouldn't say that everybody was in a dour mood, but I think everybody was putting quite a brave face on it. And with all the build-up training that we'd done, I think people were just wanting to get in there and get over and done with. You know, the only way out was to get back. That was it, you know. We were prepared for it. I think we were in good spirits over it. But that initial brief that we got from the CO about 80% casualties had changed. We'd had another brief after that, so we did feel that a little bit better then, you know. So, yeah.
So what was it like when you landed? What did you do? What was the routine?
Well, as soon as we landed, you could feel the heat as soon as the door opened, and it was getting dark at that stage. We were getting moving right into the night time. You could smell the air as soon as you got off the plane. But straight away it was straight into a truck, straight onto a camp, a tented camp. I think it was Camp Blackadder or whatever it was. I can't remember the names. Basically, it was just a short stop to get all your in theatre issue kit, and then it was a case of right, there's your transport, get on it, you're away up country now to your locations, and that was it. It was quite a very swift movement from being on a plane to actually being sat in the middle of the desert looking around you and not seeing nothing for miles, you know.
So tell me about your experiences during the first Gulf War.
It was quite hard, I think. At that stage, I think I'd been in the army as an out of training 2 years, and I'd done exercise with the regiments and that I'd been with, and a lot of the time we concentrate ourselves in making sure the equipment works, that's really as a whole, and we seem to avoid the tactical side of it. Now, the build-up training we'd done with going with 16th, 5th, prior to the Gulf, we started doing the tactical side of it more so that we could bring ourselves to the level of the people we were supporting. That stepped up quite a lot there. We did a lot more of that. I think we were totally prepared for all that, for the tactics, but it was always a bit of a worrying thing.
So what was morale like out there generally? Were people obviously worried about it, or did you all put a brave face on it?
I think people were more worried about the injections that we were going to get, you know. We didn't actually know what was across the border. We'd started to read the papers because the papers had started feeding through, and they gave all these sort of descriptions of what we were facing and all this sort of thing. And always used to show loads and loads of their stuff, but then it was just us because they just kept what we had out there limited, obviously, so they didn't know. But morale, once you got yourself in a routine out there and you'd actually started to learn to survive, to live in that condition, it got better. The big thing was the heat. I think a lot of people put the fact that we were going to go to war to the back of their minds and just cracked on what they had to do, and just concentrating on surviving at that initial time. That was all, you know. But morale was quite high. Yeah.
What was the lifestyle like? How did you live? How did you eat?
Well, we were obviously on rations for the whole time we were out there. I think I got one cookhouse meal, and that was at that time we went to the cookhouse, the tented accommodation down in the port or where we flew into, I can't remember what it was. But the rest of the time it was all off rations, living off the side of the wagon. It's the way you used to, you know. Hard routine initially, but you get used to it, and then it's second nature, you know.
What about mail and contact with home?
Loads. I remember there was a bloke from Seven Armoured, Remy it was at the time, Seven Armoured Remy, it was now the 2 Battalion. I can't remember his name, but he wrote a letter to his son, and he says, look, there's loads of squaddies out here, nothing much to do at the minute, send us any pen pals. And I think he was receiving something like 12, 15 sacks of mail a day. And what you used to distribute, obviously keep the best ones for himself, but then, you know, depending where you come in the pile as to what you ended up getting. But yeah, it was It was all right with the mail system. The papers were coming through slowly but surely, and they kicked up a Sunday Times or something like that. I can't remember what it's called, but they kicked up a magazine which came out, I think, on a monthly basis. Like, you know.
So, what did you think when it was actually all over and you were told you were going to be going home? Or did you go home straight away?
Yeah, well, we were quite lucky. I think we stopped for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks after, a month afterwards. We got pulled out quite quickly. We'd suffered a few nasty setbacks while we were out there. But we were told we were going home. Well, a lot of people didn't believe it till I actually got on the plane. You know, they couldn't see an end to it at the time. It started to get quite hot. So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to get out there. The second one was, well, a lot of things you just wanted to leave behind. You know.
Did you actually see any Iraqis whilst you were out there?
There was millions of them. There was a lot of people said they didn't actually have the will to fight. They did have the will to fight, depends on who you were taking on. But there was loads, whether they were coming back as they were surrendering as POWs or you were standing fighting them, then there was plenty of them about, yeah.
So did you settle back into normal routine once you got back to the UK?
Yeah, become a big blur then, because all the money we'd saved up, it then become one of the biggest parties ever, you know. I actually met up with a few of the guys that I was out there with. We'd arranged that when we were out in the Gulf and we get back on leave, we'll go and visit each other and we'll go around each other's towns and that and have a party. And we'd done all that and it was good. It was quite good. We couldn't have had enough time off at the end as well. I ended up with about 6 weeks leave, which was at that time, that was a yearly quota. You know, and I got out in one lump. It was brilliant, you know. And I still had my leave card to go for. But it was cool. That was really good.
And what rank were you then?
I was Lance Corporal then, yeah. I'd got that when I was at Scots Guards prior to getting attached to 16th Lancers.
So what did you do after you come back off leave?
Well, that was basically it for me with 16th Lancers. I then got sent back to my parent unit, which was of Scots Guards. And then went back into the normal training side of life. Just normal regimental training, building up to regimental exercise, everything else like that. And that was the routine when we got back there.
So was that... did you feel that was something very different from actually being deployed? Did you notice the sort of routine work more once you'd been deployed than when you were just training beforehand?
What, the changes in routine?
Yeah. Were you changed person, I suppose?
I think it probably took some of the sting out of people. Not in a bad way. I think it just brought them down to level-headed sort of people after that. Opened your eyes up, basically. Matured you. Yeah, I would say definitely matured you. You learnt quickly. You learnt to deal with a lot of things like your fear. I mean, I'm not saying that we were right at the bottom edge of it all the time, you know what I mean? But we had the encounters that we did have, you know, they certainly took the strongest man and knocked them down a peg and brought the weakest man up at the time, you know. You know, very much teamwork, and that in these situations that always comes through as a teamwork. You know, if it doesn't, then you can see straight away where the fallings are, you can see it's not working.
So what particular vehicles were you?
I was working on a Samson, a CVRT Samson at the time. Quite cramped, because the bloke I was living with was quite a big bloke, you know. And we just ended up as a spares carrier for the rest of the squadron. And we ended up carrying all sorts of stuff for them so that they didn't have the room on their wagon. So we had maybe a tiny bit of space that we could jam something in, you know. It was comfortable. Once you got used to living in that sort of way, you know. But yeah, it was all right.
So what's it like actually living basically in a Samson?
Well, you don't actually live inside it. There's no way you can do that. We'd got ourselves a couple of camp cots and we used to sleep there. If we didn't have enough time for the, because we were going to be moving or the possibility of a move, then we'd just sleep on top of the wagon as we were. If I was commanding at a time, then I'd just climb up and just curl myself around the commander's hatch. If I was driving at a time, then I'd just lie across the engine louvers in my sleeping bag, you know, just straight away, ready to just jump straight in the wagon and just go, you know.
So how many crew does it have, just two?
Well, yeah, we just had the two on there, two recce mix, you know. There was some Samsons out there had three people in it. I don't know how they handled that, you know. I wouldn't know what I encountered that one.
And how many did you have in the squadron, how many Samsons?
We had the two Samsons, you know. Busy, lots of work, lots of driving though, you know. I think in total, once we'd gone through the actual breach, I think in total I drove about 700 miles or kilometres, whatever they were thinking. But 700 miles to want to actually put the vehicle in the port and come home, you know. It was a lot of driving, a lot of towing as well.
Do they need much maintenance over that amount of distance?
I was quite lucky. Myself and the other guy who was crewing with, he was very good on Samson, and I'd not really dealt much with it, and he brought me on quite quickly to the use of the Samson, how to look after it. So his knowledge rubbed off on me, and in the end, when we had a very good wagon throughout the whole time. We're quite lucky. I think we only had to change a steering caliper in the whole time we were there. The wagon was very much dead by the time we got it to the port, like, because obviously the spares availability and priority changes as you're leaving theatre because of people staying behind, you know.
Yes, how did you get spares?
I don't know how they done it. We got them, but I don't know how we done it, you know. That was not really my problem to worry about. If I needed something, I demanded it. And how they got it there, I don't know. It was funny to watch some of the supply trains coming up, not supply trains, supply lines coming up, because there was absolutely loads and loads of vehicles in each one. And how they kept track of that, I don't know. You know, it was quite scary sometimes.
So, moving on to the Second Gulf War. What did you think when you were told that you were going to be deployed the second time?
Same again. You could tell in the news that it was going to... something was going to happen. You could tell it was. At that stage, we didn't know who was going to go. But we'd just come off Battis the year before, off Midman 3. And we'd then taken... Once we'd come back off Battis, we'd then taken over as lead armoured task force. So we knew that if something was going down... From the briefings we got from the commanding officer, and from, because it was two squadrons of C squadron and B squadron from Queen's Royal Lancers were attached to the RRF battle group, we knew we were going to be the lead battle group into theatre if anything was going to happen. But we didn't know at that time whether or not we were going to deploy. We were just waiting on what the news was going to happen. So at that stage we just planned and just trained, prepared the equipment.
So again, it was just training for desert warfare again.
We just trained, just honed our skills. We were quite lucky because we'd just come off the Medman last year. We'd got quite a very good pass on the Medman.
What's that?
A good pass. Well, basically, you get graded when you do the Medman. You've got to achieve CP level 4. I think we achieved CP level 5 or something like that. Maybe even 6. I can't remember. I know we got quite a high. I think the Battis commander said that was the best two armoured squadrons he'd ever seen come through Battis in his career, and well, that just shows that the spirit of C squadron. It was lazy but lethal was the motto of them, like, you know.
So again, how were you transported BC-10 again?
I can't remember what we actually flew out on. We flew out from Hanover again. I can't remember what plane we flew out on. I think it would have been a VC-10. I think it was definitely RAF that flew us out, but I can't remember what they flew us out on. And we flew into Q8 City with that one. Q8 Airport.
So what were your thoughts on being deployed to the Gulf yet again?
I thought it was quite ironic because the first Gulf War, 1605 Lancers, they renamed themselves to Queen's Royal Lancers with the amalgamation of 1721st to the 1605th. And I thought it was quite ironic the fact that I was going back with the same squadron the second time round. Training had got us all through it, we were all ready to do it again. I don't think the apprehension was there as much. I think that as soon as we set off, I think everybody was wanting to get home, you know, and that was the general feeling. The morale was very, very high. I don't know, how would you say? Anticipation was high in what we were actually going to do. We didn't even know at that stage whether we were going to go in, you know.
Did the lads who hadn't been before look up to you as you've been in the first Gulf War?
I think that a lot of people learnt a lot through people who'd been out there before. Mm-hmm. Basically, you know, when it comes down to equipment that you took out, what was ideal equipment, what was some good piece of equipment to take. I think